Okay, it's really an unmitigated pleasure to be here to learn together, and it is Erev Tanit Esther, which is a very important day of, you know, Tfilah and Tzom, and we really hope that the Yeshua and Benafochu will come very soon. We are speaking about something very apropos, because we are speaking about Esther's role in the Megillah, and especially I would like to kind of highlight why is it really Megillat Esther and not Megillat Mordechai? We mentioned Mordechai right first, before we even are introduced to Esther. Three times we say his name out loud, we end with Mordechai. So the real question is, why isn't it Megillat Mordechai? And we'll see why. We know, of course, Esther was the main heroine, but we're going to see why she plays such an important role. Okay, we have to start from the very beginning. If we look at the halacha very strongly and the chachamim very strongly, right, emphasize that before we get to Purim, we have to read all about Amalek. We all know that this Shabbat is Shabbat Zachor. We all have to be in shul to hear the Kriyat HaTorah of Zachor et Asher Asah Lecha Amalek. Very rare do we have a Kriyat HaTorah that we're all mechoyev to go to, right, and to hear. So this is a very unusual thing. But Shabbat Zachor has to come right before Purim. We have to read about Amalek on Purim. And it's not just, one. If you look at the sources that we have here in the Mishnah and Masechet Megillah and then the Gemara, right, in Masechet Megillah, we see very poignantly that I'm on page one of the Esther's role in the Megillah. Each woman starts a new pagination. So we're after Benot Slavchad and we're in Esther. So we see in Masechet Megillah, Perek Gimel Mishnah Dalet, that Shabbat Zachor, what do you have to read? Right? You have to read the Kriya in the Torah of Dvarim Zachor Tasher Asah Lecha Amalek. What do we read as a Haftorah on Shabbat Zachor? Look at the second source, right? In Masechet Megillah, in the Gemara, it says that, we have to read the story of Shaul and his battle with Amalek before Purim. And on Purim, the next source in the Mishnah, again, we're going back to the Mishnah, on Purim, what do you have to read? You have to read the piece in the Torah that tells us that Amalek came to fight with Bnei Israel. So Purim is suffused with the idea of Amalek. And you have to know the story of Amalek and our real confrontation with Amalek before we can get into the story of Purim. And this story of our confrontation with Amalek is something that really spans the entire Tanakh. It starts in Sefer Breshit, we see it in Nevi'im, and we finish with it in Megillat Esther, which is one of the last Sfarim in Tanakh. Now, if you look at number four, the Gemara also discusses, so how did Esther get Megillat Esther added on to the Tanakh? How did she get this celebrated as a big holiday long term? So we see very interestingly that Esther sent a message to the Chachamim. Shalcha lahem Esther l'chachamim, kva'uni l'dorot. Establish me for generations. Because in the Megillah, we're going to see one of the last things about Esther, right, is that she writes the Megillah, right? In the end, we have that piece. But she comes to the Chachamim and she says, Kva'uni l'dorot. We're on source number four. And Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i explains, how did she base this request? Meaning it has to be based on something. We all know that you need an asmachta, you need a proof text, right? When you want to base anything in halacha or anything in minhag, you have to have a leg to stand on. So Rabbi Lazar has a beautiful idea, and he says, we're going to see this phrase in Shmot when we read it. In the end of the battle of Amalek, we have that Hashem tells to Moshe, Ktov zot basefer, right? Vesim, Ktov zot, right? Zikaron basefer v'sim ba'ozne Yehoshua. So ktov zot, Esther is explaining, that is the written Torah, right? Torah shebichtav. We have two places where we talk about Amalek. So Esther is saying, look, my story and my defeat of Amalek really starts all the way in Torah. and the battle with Amalek. So I'm part of this bigger story. Zikaron, what does the Gemara say? Masha katuv b'nevi'im. It's already continuing in Navi. Basefer, masha katuv b'ktuvim, b'megillah. Which means that Esther is saying my story really spans all of Tanakh, all of Jewish history. My story is the story of Am Yisrael, is the story of our battle with Amalek. And I really, in the end, defeated at least the physical Amalek, right? We still have this idea of evil, and that's why we have Haftarat Zachor, the Maftir of Zachor, right? Every year, and it's a mitzvah d'oraita, right? To actually hear the Kriya of the Torah on Shabbat. Why is that? Because we have an obligation to destroy evil. So even if the physical Amalek was destroyed, this idea, right, of our job is something that is forever. And Esther says, I played a very important role in that. And that's why Megillat Esther and Purim really should be remembered forever. So where does this story start? We're saying, oh, Amalek and our battle is so eternal. Where does it all really start? And if you look at Bereishit Perek Kaf Hei, source number 5, you see that, yes, it starts all the way back with Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov and Esav, right, have these opposite ideas. They have these opposite values. But Esav is the Bechor. And Yaakov buys the Bechorah from Esav, and Esav doesn't really care, right? Once he gets his food, we see in the last Pasuk, Pasuk Lamed Dalet, V'Yaakov Natan Le'Esav Lechem Unezida Dashim, he gives him some lentil soup and some bread. And what does Esav do? He eats, V'Yochal, V'Yesh, he drinks, V'Yaakov, he gets up, V'Yelech, and he goes, Vayivez Esav et ha-bechorah. This is a very important word, which means he despises the Bechorah, which means we see these are two different values that we have. For Yaakov, it's something that he's fighting for. For Esav, oh, he's willing to give it away just for bread and lentils. And even after he's sated, and even after he understands, and even after he's fully aware, you can't say, oh, he's tired from the field. He really does know what he's doing. After he's fully full, right? Vayivez Esav et ha-bechorah. But we know that Esav was very close to his father, and he was the Bechor, and Yitzchak loved Esav. And when Yitzchak gives the bracha to Yaakov, thinking that he is Esav, there is something that, right, bothers Yaakov in his request, right? According to Rashi, when he says, Anochi, and then it's Esav Bechorecha. And Yaakov questions Rivka, oh, should I really do this? But Yaakov does it because he feels, right, that he has to get the bracha from Yitzchak. But Yitzchak gives it to him not knowing that it is Yaakov. But once he finds out, and we're in source number 6, once he finds out that it is Yaakov, he says, Gam baruch yihyeh, right? He realizes that Yaakov really deserves the bracha. But Esav is coming. He prepared this food. He's coming to his father that he loves very much. And when he hears that Yaakov received the bracha, what happens? Pasuk Lamedalad, we're in source number 6, we're in Perek Kavzayin, Pasuk Lamedalad in Breshit. Kishmo Esav et Divrei Aviv, when he hears the words of his father, that not only did he know that it was Yaakov, but in the end, and he's still willing to give him the bracha, Esav cries, Vayitzak tzaka gedola umara ad meod. Esav cries a terrible cry, and he says to his father, Barcheni gamani avi, also give me a bracha. And we have a beautiful idea in Ramban. Ramban says, Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim. There are two ways to explain Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim. One, and Ramban means both. One, right, is the idea that we follow the example of our forefathers. They're role models for us. Another idea of Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, according to Ramban, is that once you do an action, once you act in this world, there are consequences. And yes, Yaakov should have taken the bracha, and he did take the bracha, but maybe the mechanism of taking the bracha, right, while really impersonating Esav, maybe was not the ideal way to do it. Now, sometimes we have to do things in a certain way, and it was important that Yaakov received the bracha. Ramban says the worry was, right, that this was going to be the bracha of Avraham passed on, and that Yaakov really needed to get this bracha. And if Esav got a wonderful bracha, right, the battle between the two, right, would almost be something that we would not be able to defeat them. But there are going to be consequences. So whenever you do something, there's going to be a consequence. And what we see in this beautiful Bereishit Rabbah is this idea, right, that the Ramban later really develops so beautifully. Look at number 6a. What does the Bereishit Rabbah say? Za'aka achat, the cry that Yaakov made Esav cry. Where do we see echoes of that? And where do we see a response to that? Ve'hechan nifralo. Where does Esav get kind of like a payback? In the sense of not a payback that he's being criticized and he's being punished, but that he is getting a satisfaction, or that is some kind of a merit or a zchut or some kind of energy out there, is when Mordechai vayizak za'aka gdola umara ad ma'od. It's not happenstance that the same exact words that Esav is crying when he hears that the bracha was given to Yaakov is the exact same language that we have when Mordechai hears about the decree that all the Jews are going to be destroyed in one day, which means there's always a reaction, spiritual thermodynamics. It's always, in a sense, a zero-sum game, according to Ramban. There's always this energy, right? There's always this echo to whatever you do in this world. It might be generations down, but there are going to be influences from the actions that you do. And the Midrash speaks about this and says there is going to be a consequence, which means everything you do will have a consequence, maybe not immediately, right? And Ramban very interestingly speaks about the idea that when you do a hishtadlut, when you make efforts and things, you always have to think about the consequences. It's not just that you do a hishtadlut, right? You have to really make sure that you think, again, we don't know everything, right? But we have to think about the consequences. A very interesting idea. So what's the point here? The point here is that whatever happens in Sefer Bereishit, right, will have influence later on. And if you look at Bereishit Lamed Bet Chet, which is number 7, when Yaakov is confronting Esav, what are the 3 things that he does? He does diplomacy, he prays to Hashem, he davens, and also what does he do? He gets ready for war. Whenever we have to confront a big enemy, right, these are the 3 things. We have to try all the different avenues. Not all the avenues work, but those are the avenues that we have to really try. And especially when we're confronting an enemy like Esav. And the Ramban, I didn't bring it in the source sheet, but the Ramban also says it's a great example, right? That whenever we really confront these kind of great enemies, we really always have to do these 3 ideas. Diplomacy, Doron, gifts, 1 second. The idea of tefillah, and the idea of getting ready for war. What's fascinating is that Ramban doesn't keep the order that we have in Pshat. He actually says the first thing, right? Because with Yaakov, the first thing was gifts, right? Diplomacy, then was tefillah, then was getting ready for war. But Ramban always puts tefillah first. In everything that Ramban really discusses, he says the first thing, right, that you have to always do is this idea of tefillah. But who is this Esav? If you look at number 8, right, in Bereishit Perek Lamed Vav, when Yaakov and Esav meet and they have to split, why do they have to split? Turn the page, right? They have to split ki yarechu sham rav, because they had too many possessions. Another thing that is always an issue with us and Esav is the material world, is this idea of rechush. And many times it comes in the way, the idea of bizah, the idea of shalal, right? The idea of the materialism, and are we doing it for the religious, right, and ultimate reasons, or are we doing it for the material goods? But look at Pasuk Yud Bet. On the top of page 2, what do we see? V'timna hayta pilegesh le'elifaz ben Esav v'teled le'elifaz et Amalek. That is the connection with Amalek. Amalek is the grandson of Esav. And that shows us that this confrontation that we have with Esav, all the generations, also is this confrontation that we have with Amalek. And it has very, very deep roots. And we see that the first group that will attack Bnei Israel when they leave Mitzrayim, after all these great nisim, right, that Hashem did, the only group that's not afraid to attack Yisrael are Amalek, right? And they come and they attack Bnei Israel when they are weak, right? when Bnei Israel have already complained, even after all the Makot have complained to Hashem, and again, the famous Rashi, Rifidim, what are they weak with? Right, we're on source number 9, we're in Shmot, Perek Yud Zayin. They're weak in Mitzvot, they're weak in Emunah. But what does Moshe have to do? What do Bnei Israel have to do when they fight Amalek? Moshe is davening, and Yoshua is fighting. But there's a very interesting debate also between Rashi and Ramban here. Rashi says, why do Moshe's hands get weak? Moshe's hands get weak because he really should have gone out to fight against Amalek. He should have done the tefillah and ishtadlut together. And because he didn't do it himself, that's why his hands are weak. Ramban says no. Ramban says, what was Moshe's job? Moshe's job was to hold his hands up and daven. All of Bnei Israel would see Moshe davening and he would be an example for them. And Yehoshua was the one who was fighting against Amalek. But we see that Amalek was not defeated at this moment. What was the outcome? Vayachalosh Yehoshua. Yehoshua was able to weaken Amalek, but not to defeat them completely. And what's fascinating here is that after this war, and again, going back to the pasuk we did earlier, look at Shmot, Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Yud Dalid. After this battle, Hashem says to Moshe, "Ktov zod zikaron basefer," right? The phrase that we used earlier, that we saw in the Gemara earlier, which means Hashem says to Moshe, this kind of battle has to be written down. Very rarely do we have, after Bnei Israel fought a war, that we say you have to write down the details, right? Only the great wars that we have. So this war with Amalek was really a great war. And Bnei Israel were not able to defeat Amalek, only to weaken Amalek. So Hashem says you have to write this as a memory and write it down, and you have to put it in the ears of Yoshua, which means the next generation. This is something also generational. In Sefer Shmot, it's Hashem's battle. Hashem says, I am going to destroy and erase, right, Amalek from under the heavens. And what does Moshe do? He builds a Mizbeach, and he calls it, Hashem is my banner, Hashem Nisi. And Pasuk Tet Zayin, what is the ending of our battle with Amalek in this first time? Is Kiyar al Keska Milchama la Hashem ba Amalek Midor Dor. Again, Hashem's battle with Amalek, right? It's Hashem's battle and Hashem's seat and Hashem's name is not complete, right? And we have this beautiful medrash, Achi Yimachesh Moshe Amalek. Because when evil exists in this world, right, Hashem's name cannot be complete. That's why it says Kiyar al Keska, but also Hashem's seat cannot be complete. And that's why it doesn't say Kisei, it says Kes. So this idea that Amalek is a very big enemy of Am Yisrael is very clear. Not only that, we mention it again in Sefer Dvarim. And in Sefer Dvarim, we remember what Amalek did, and it explains, because we were, Pasuk Yudchet, we're number 10 on Dvarim, Perek Kafhei, Pasuk Yudchet, Va'ata Ayef V'yagea V'lo Yare Elokim. It's a little ambiguous, right? Are Bnei Israel weary? Is Amalek, right, not God-fearing? But they came after you, right, to all the people who were tired, who were the individuals who were weak, right? We have many descriptions that they came, Vayizanev Bacha, they came in the back, all the people who were trailing, the weak, the people who were unsuspecting, right? That is not fair warfare. And here we have the Tzav to Bnei Israel. When Bnei Israel are established in the Eretz Israel, Timche et Zecher Amalek. It's our job, but also we have to erase their memory, but we can't forget. Which means it's a important message that we have to erase evil, but we also have to remember what evil has done, because then we know to always fight evil throughout all the generations. And we have an interesting midrash. Why was Yoshua the one who fought? Because there is an idea that it is the children of Rachel who are going to destroy Amalek. Masoret she'ein Esav nofel ela biyad bnei banei shel Rachel. So either from Ephraim and Menashe or from Binyamin, who are both, right? Or all three, because Yosef, right, splits. We did that last time, right? Their legacy is to destroy Amalek. So what's fascinating is that, of course, the first melech that we have in Am Yisrael is Shaul HaMelech. He is from Shevet Binyamin, and it's his job, in addition to being the first king, right, to destroy Amalek. There are three laws that Bnei Israel had when they came into Eretz Israel. One was to anoint a king. Two is to destroy Amalek. Three is to build the Beit HaBchirah. But it's so important that you have to destroy Amalek before you can even build the Beit HaMikdash, because you can't have that kind of evil in the world before you could reach this kind of spiritual perfection. So what is the job? Shmuel HaNavi tells Shaul, you have to listen to the words of Hashem. So we're now doing the Haftorah. So far, right, we read the Kriya in Purim, we read the Maftir that we read on Shabbat Zachor, and now we're reading the Haftorah that we read on Shabbat Zachor, which means this is how we introduce ourselves to Megillat Esther. And what does Shmuel say? You have to listen to the words of Hashem. Now look very carefully at the language, Pasuk Gimel. We're in Perek Tedvav, source number 12, Pasuk Gimel. What do you have to do? This is Shmuel telling Shaul, who's the king, who now has the responsibility to destroy Amalek. Lech v'kitat Amalek. You have to destroy Amalek. And what do you have to do? You have to put in cherem all of their possessions. Kol asher lo v'hecheramtem. All the possessions have to be put in cherem. Why? Because it can't be that you're doing this battle for the material goods. That would seem like you're doing it for the money. You're not doing it for the ultimate idea. V'lo tachmol alav. Right? Hard for us to understand this idea, a special idea about Amalek. It's very hard for us to understand. Not to have compassion, right? Whether women and men and children, right? A very difficult mitzvah that he has. But that is the tzivoy of Hashem with Amalek. So we understand, right, the Mishnah and especially the Medrash says, Shaul had a trouble with this. He had difficulty because we're Rachmanim, even in Eglah Rufah, where we find one person who we don't know who killed this person, we get all the leaders who say we're responsible. So we know we care about human life. We care about people. In all our other battles, we really have very strong rules of engagement. So how can you do this to Amalek? So Shaul is worrying about this, right? The Medrash says. However, if Shaul was really worrying about it, what should he have done? He should have confronted Shmuel and say, okay, right? What's the right thing to do, right? Is there any other option? Or to find out from Dvar Hashem. But yet, what does Shaul do? What are his actions? Pasuk chet, vayitpos et agag melech Amalek chai. Instead of maybe killing just the one person who represents this entire nation, he leaves the king alive, Agag Melech Amalek. And not only that, ve'et kol ha'am hechrim lefi charev. He destroys all the people, which means if he had any doubts, he should have left the people alive, right? And maybe just kill the king, which would be symbolic, let's say. But what Shaul does is he really inverts the entire tzivui. And not only that, Vayachmol Shaul va'am al agag va'al meitav hatzon. They also have compassion on the material goods. So they have compassion on the king and on the material goods. Exactly the opposite of what the tzivui was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So look at Pasuk Yud Aleph. What happens? Shmuel cries out to Hashem all night, which means we see this idea of crying out, always connecting with Esav, with Amalek, and we're going to see Haman ha'agagi with Mordechai, which means Shmuel understands that this is a massive failure. And this is the final reason why Shaul loses the melucha. This is a massive failure because when you do something that really needs to be done in a very special way, right, then you have to have all the messages clear. Because Shaul didn't really leave the messaging clear, right, it was a terrible failure for Am Yisrael. So what do we see? Like last time, we spoke about this idea of redemption, of Geulah. We're going to see that what is the Megillah? A redemption for the actions of Shaul. A redemption for the house of Binyamin. A way to confront Amalek that makes it clear what are the parameters. Who are the actors? What is everyone's intention? What are everyone's goals? And when we're introduced to Mordechai in Megillat Esther, we are a little fascinated because now we're doing Megillat Esther. Look at number 13. We're in Esther Perek Bet, and we're on source page number 2 on the bottom. When we're introduced to Mordechai, very fascinatingly, Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Habira. Mordechai is identified as a Yehudi. Now we know why he's identified as a Yehudi, because then we only have Yehuda and Binyamin and a little of Levi, and the Jews are mostly from Malchut Yehuda, from the Judean Empire down south, who are now in Galut, and Mordechai is their leader. So Mordechai is now the leader of the Jews. So he's HaYehudi. But really, what is Mordechai's lineage? He's really Ben Yair, Ben Shim'i, Ben Kish, Ishimini. He is really from Shevet Binyamin, right? And not only that, Kish is Shaul's father. So who's written out of history here? Shaul HaMelech. Which means if I wanted to identify myself and I was connected to a monarchy or I was from a very special family, I would want to flaunt that. I would want to say that. But what we see here is that we're mentioning Shimi, right? Ben Gera, who's the one who cursed David and David doesn't kill him, right? We have the mention of Kish, Shaul's father, but why not say you're from the dynasty of Shaul HaMelech? Why not identify and really emphasize that you are from Binyamin? So we have a very interesting Gemara. Look at number 14. The Gemara first, I gave you part of the Gemara, right? The Gemara first says, right? Mordechai is the Yehudi because we identify him with David. David doesn't kill, right? Shimi ben Gera. So what happens? Shimi ben Gera has a child. Eventually we'll have Mordechai, and Mordechai saves the Jews. So we're identifying him with the actions of David. But whose actions are we not identifying him with? Look at the Gemara, right? We don't want to identify him with Shaul because Shaul did not kill Agag. And Agag, who is Agag's progeny? Haman. Because what do we call Haman? Haman ha'agagi. So we have direct lineage from Amalek, from Agag Melech Amalek, that Shaul left alive, and now he's going to really bring practically destruction for Am Yisrael, which means that we have written Shaul a little out of history because of these actions. And Mordechai, he is a builder. We're in Galut, and it says four times, look at Perek Bet Pasuk Vav, number 15. When we talk about Bnei Yisrael and Galut, it says four times the word Galut, which means we find a failure also of Malchut Yehuda, because they brought the Churban Bayit, and the kings of Yehuda, right, were set into exile, and after this, we don't have any more kings from Malchut Yehuda. But Mordechai, being in Galut, has two choices. Either he can be in Avelut, think this is the end, or to build in Galut. And he says, we are going to establish ourselves. And he does that by showing that we're building family. And he adopts Esther, who doesn't have any parents, if you see in the Pasuk, right? And he treats her like his own daughter. And that is this idea that, oh, there is continuity. There is hope. Mordechai sees that we can establish ourselves and really make a living here in Galut. But what's fascinating is, how do we identify Esther? Right here, we're talking about Esther. She has two names. Later on, we tell about her lineage later on in the Megillah. But what's fascinating is that the Gemara wants to discuss Esther. Even though it says, Hana'ara yefat toar v'tovat mareh, that she's beautiful, right? The Gemara wants to say, well, she's average. And that is what Hadassah implies. Maybe she has a green complexion, right? The Hadassah is not the biggest, it's not the smallest, it's the average of everything we take in the Arba Minim. But what was her success? What was her ace in the hole? It was her chesed. The chut shel chesed she mashuch aleha, that she had grace. She had a certain kind of equanimity. She had a certain kind of tzniut. And where does she get that tzniut? She gets it from, and again, we're number 16 in the Gemara, she gets it from Rachel, right? Because Rachel was tznua, Shaul, who was also tznua, right? When they anoint Shaul as king, what does he do? Nechba lakelim, he hides, right? When people criticize him, vayhi kemacharish, he doesn't want to hear, which means he's a very humble king. And that aspect of humility goes down from Rachel. She was also quiet. She gives her sister the signs. We also know that Binyamin was quiet, right? What did we read this past Parsha? We read about the Choshen, and what is the Choshen stone of Binyamin? Yashpeh, and what is the famous Midrash? Yeshpeh v'shotek. We know that Binyamin was around during the Mechira of Yosef, but we don't hear his voice. We know Binyamin was brought down to Mitzrayim to meet everybody, right? And yet we don't hear a word from him. He's the main character, right? All the trouble was just to bring Binyamin back down. So this idea of being quiet and not speaking out is a certain kind of personality trait, right, that we have throughout the Shevet. So Esther is more in line with Shaul and Rachel. So again, I want to bring back this idea that we spoke about earlier. Who can really destroy Amalek? It's Bnei Baneah Shel Rachel. So even though officially Mordechai HaYehudi comes into that category, but in his Ruchnius, right, he's more of a Yehuda type. Steps forward, right? We're going to see, of course, he doesn't bow down to Haman, right? Vaygash alav Yehuda, vaygash David alav Plishti. This idea of being frontal, of being outspoken, of being really stepping up, that is really a Yehuda quality that we have. But what do we see about Esther? She is more hidden. Even her name represents that. And she is more in line with Shaul. And the Gemara, look at number 17 in Masechet Megillah, right? Because the Gemara has a lot of discussions about a lot of Sfarim and Tanakh. And in Megillah, of course, we're discussing, right, Megillat Esther. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Kshakodesh Baruch Hu posek gdula la'adam posek levanav v'livnei vanav ad sof kol hadorot. What does that mean? If your family has greatness, you can always reach back to that. We did Benot Slovchad, and what did we say? They can always reach back to that greatness of Yosef and loving Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara is saying every time you have greatness thrust upon you and it's in your family, you can always reach back and rehabilitate it. You can always bring it back because there is something in essence that continues forever. And what does that say about Esther? What's the idea here? She has monarchy. She has malchut in her genetic makeup. And what do we see? She is going to become Esther Hamalka, but she also has the ability to step forward and be queen-like and to be someone who really represents the monarchy. But in the beginning, we don't see that part of her. What do we see? We see the quiet part. What did Mordechai tell Esther? You can't say anything about who you are, where you are. No one should know who you are. And Mordechai keeps on telling her and giving her the tzivui that she shouldn't say. And we don't hear Esther's voice in the first four prakim, in the first three and a bit, right, of the Megillah. She is masteret et dvareha. She's always an object of other people, right? She is chosen. She is brought. She is made queen, right? Mordechai tells her that Bigtan Vateresh want to kill the king, and she brings that message over. But we don't see her initiating anything yet in the Megillah. Mordechai is the one who initiates all the time. He made sure that they know that the king was going to be poisoned, and he foils it. He steps forward and does not want to bow down to Haman. But there are also going to be consequences to that kind of behavior. Let's go to number 19. We're still in Esther Perek Bet. We're in 20 Esther Perek Gimel. When Mordechai doesn't bow down to Haman, Haman sees and he's filled with rage. Pasuk Vav, we're in page 3, number 20, Esther Perek Gimel, and we're in Pasuk Vav. Vayivez be'einav lishloach yad b'Mordechai levado. Again, the theme, Vayivez Esav et ha-bchora, Haman, same characteristic. Oh, he despises. It's not worth it just to destroy Mordechai. I have to destroy all the Jewish people because he's not bowing down to me, which means this excessive evil, which means it's pure anti-Semitism, right? He doesn't even have any reason. What's the reason even that he gives? Ah, they're different than everyone. They're spread upon all the different nations. Ah, they don't do all the things that the king does. They do separate kind of rules. And Pasukhet, it's not worth it for you to leave them alive, which means the materialistic idea, which means the Jews and the money. And it's not worth it for you because if you keep them, they're going to keep their money. But if you kill them, what's going to be? You're going to take their money. So when Haman, right, does the decree against the Jews, I just want you to see bottom of page 3 in Pasuk Yud. This is the first time. How do we identify him? Haman ben Hamdata Ha'agagi tzorer ha'yehudim, which means he is the one who now wants to destroy the Jews, right? Just from this one action that Mordechai does, and again, we know how crazy it is that one event, right, can just change world history, or one day can make such a big difference. Turn the page. What is the decree, right? And how does he do it? He throws a pur, lots, right, to see when we're going to destroy Bnei Israel. And again, this Amalek idea. They send out messages. And what is the message? Look at Pasuk Yud Gimel. We're in Esther Perek Gimel. Pasuk Yud Gimel. They send out messages, Lahashmid, Laharogu, Laabed, right? To destroy all the Yudim. Minar Va'ad Zaken, Tafen Hashim. What does this sound like? Very similar to the decree that we had to do with Amalek, which means we see that what does Haman think? Oh, there is an equivalence here. And what do they want to do? Ushlalam lavoz, to take all the possessions. What was part of the problem of what Shaul did? He leaves the king alive, and Haman is a representative of that king, Ha'agagi. Not only that, but what does Haman say? We're going to take all the spoils. Ushlalam lavoz, which means this is what we're going to do. And everyone thinks, oh, that's okay, right? Because everyone is already corrupting what, you know, has happened in history. And after he's doing this, what does he do? V'hamelech v'haman yashvu lishtot. They're sitting and they're drinking and they're partying after they gave this decree, right? You have to be very callous. You have to be very evil, right? That you don't even have a heavy hand, heart, right? When something like this happens, you're celebrating this destruction that you're going to bring upon the Jews. And what does Mordechai realize? Look at number 21, Esther Perek Dalet. Mordechai hears all this, and his response is, we're going back to our original pasuk, Vayikra Mordechai et Bagadav, Vayilbash Sak Vaefer, Vayitze Betoch Ha'ir, Vayizak Zaaka Gdola Umara. What is going on here? Mordechai realizes it's the end of the line. He rips his clothes, right? He wears sack va'efer. He wears sackcloth because in his mind, what he's seeing, we're being paid back, right? We took the bracha, right? We didn't do the right destruction of Amalek. And now this is going to be the end of Jewish history, right? Because the 127 lands don't just include Galut. They include Eretz Yisrael, which means Ahasuerus is going to destroy all the Jewish people in all the known lands where the Jews live. And not only that, he goes out in the city and he cries out, Za'aka Gdola Umara. And people see what Mordechai is doing. And what is the response in other places? Pasuk Gimel, right? We're in Esther Perek Dalet, Pasuk Gimel. Evel Gadol, everyone who hears the decree, everyone who knows what Mordechai is doing, Evel Gadol LaYehudim, everyone is in mourning. V'tzom u'b'chiyu misped, everyone is in avelut. And they are wearing sackcloth. The majority of the people, which means everyone is depressed. Everyone thinks this is the end. Everyone is an avelut. What is avelut? Avelut means that you are mourning a death, right? Thinking that this is the end. And we understand this could be the end of the Jewish people as we know it. And Mordechai realizes this. Mordechai tried in his way, but he can't even go to the king because he's wearing sackcloth. Who's the only one who could be his messenger now? It could only be Esther. But it also makes sense because who is the only one who could really defeat Haman and save the Jewish people? It's Esther. Because Mordechai, he's doing it as a Yehuda, right? And Yehuda doesn't have the zchut of destroying Amalek. It has to be Esther. And she represents Shaul. She has tzniut. She is really a queen. She continues that idea of monarchy. And she has the ability in her own quiet way to step up. What was the failure of Shaul? Not that he was tsanua. It's great that he was tsanua, that he was modest and he was a good person. But the time comes, no matter how modest you are, no matter how, you know, you feel, oh, I'm not the kind of charismatic, outgoing person to do these kind of things. There are many ways that you could save the Jewish people. Each one of us has the ability in our own way and even in our quiet way to save Am Yisrael, right? You don't have to always be outgoing, right? There's so many different ways and there's so many different roles. And that's why the Midrash wanted to emphasize that Esther is every woman. She's average, right? But when the time came, she knew she had to step up. So we're going to see how that manifests itself. Now you have to understand, Mordechai, who told her to be quiet, is now coming to her and telling her you have to step up. So look at, we're in Perek Dalet. As we said, Esther only starts to speak in Perek Dalet. We're on source number 23, and we see something very important. Mordechai comes, and he can't come in because he's wearing sackcloth. He's in Avelut. He's crying. He's davening to Hashem. But he's also in bitter Avelut, thinking, oh my gosh, the end is near. What's my only avenue that I could try, at least that I can be responsible for to try, right? In addition, of course, to crying out to Hashem. He says to her, look, this is the decree. And what is fascinating, Does Mordechai think that she doesn't know what's happening? Maybe it's possible that she is in the palace, so separate from Am Yisrael, that she doesn't know what's happening. And he shows her the decree. We're in Pasuk Chet, number 23, Esther Perek Dalet, Pasuk Chet. He shows her the decree, Ula Hagidla, and he's telling her, Ula Tzavot Aleh, meaning, okay, I'm commanding you, Esther. Till now I commanded you not to say anything, and now I'm commanding you, right, to do something. What should you do? Lavo el ha-melech ulitchanen lo ulevakesh milfanav alama. Beg for Am Yisrael. That's your job. This is Mordechai's plan. My plan, stepping up and defying Haman, didn't work. Now, my plan is you go and beg before the king and make sure that he saves Am Yisrael. What does Esther say? You can't tell me that, right? We all know the rule. I could only come to the king if he calls me. I wasn't called for all these days, right? For 30 days. And I can't just step forward, right? So she's saying, you know, you're telling me to be quiet. I wasn't called. I can't switch gears so quickly. So how does Mordechai convince her to act? And these are very important words. Look at Pasuk Yud Gimel. What does Mordechai say to Esther? Al tedami benafshech lilamet lihimalet beit hamelech mikol hayudim. Don't think that you could save your life by hiding in the palace. Now, we're seeing that Mordechai thinks she's hiding in the palace. She doesn't even know there's a decree. But don't think you could hide in the palace and be separate. Now, let's turn the page for a second. Who from the house of Shaul was hiding in the palace looking at someone who was dancing and singing with all of Am Yisrael and thinking, that's not what we do? Michal bat Shaul. We know that's a Shaul quality, right? Even the daughters in the family, right? Michal bat Shaul, even though she's married to David, when she sees, him dancing and singing with all Am Yisrael, she's looking out the window. She's in her palace, looking out to everybody. So I would like to offer that when Mordechai tells her to turn back, right, to Pasuk Yud Gimel, we're on page 4, Pasuk Yud Gimel, right, towards the bottom, when Mordechai is telling her, you can't hide in the palace, he's really referencing even something from the family. Right? And I told you to hide in the palace, but not anymore. Right now, you have to step up. We're changing gears. Look further on. Pasuk Yudalad. Im hacharesh tacharishi ba'et hazot. If you're going to be quiet at this time, what is the full symbol of Esther? Quiet, being hidden. What did we say about Shaul? Vayhi kimacharish. He was quiet when people criticized him. So he's telling her, now you have to go out of your comfort zone, right? Out of that persona that you have really been enveloping, right? You can't be quiet at this moment. You can't do the Shaul thing at this moment. Why? Because Revach Vatzala Yamod Layudimi Makoma Cher Va'atu Beit Avich Tovedu. He's telling her, Hashem will save Am Yisrael. Revach Vatzala Yamod Layudimi Makoma Cher. We know today Hashem is going to save us. For thousands of generations, crazy things have happened to us, and we will succeed, right? We will survive. We will go on. But what does Mordechai tell her? Ve'atu beit avich tovedu. What is your job now? You, as the daughter of Shaul, right, who failed in destroying Amalek, now this is your time. Which means a lot of times we could say someone else is responsible. And Hashem's going to make sure that we are not going to be destroyed because we have a covenant with a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Our covenantal relationship is that Am Yisrael is not going to be destroyed. Maybe only a few of us, a handful are going to survive, and then from them, right, a whole, flurry of people are going to continue. But we want to be the people who are going to step up and help save Am Yisrael. And that's what Mordechai is telling Esther. Hashem is going to save Am Yisrael, and there'll be other times and other places that Hashem is going to make sure. But you want to be the actor. You want to be the one that is going to be responsible for this. Because if not, you and your family are going to be destroyed. What do you mean? They're from the same family, right? They come from the same lineage. But who does she represent? She strongly represents Shaul. Mordechai is already a Yehudi. He's identified in a totally different way. He is saving Am Yisrael. He's a leader of Am Yisrael. We see him as the head of Yehuda. But what about Shaul? What about that he was written out of history? What about the fact that he failed with Amalek? Mordechai is telling her, now this is your time to step up. No one else can do this. Even I tried. But you have that responsibility. And what does he further tell her? Umi yodea im la'et kazot higat l'malchut. You achieved monarchy, to be a queen for this moment. You're the connecting line with Shaul. He was king, and now you have malchut, right? He doesn't even say the word at malka. He says, you have malchut. You have, right, monarchy. You are in that direct line. And what is Esther's response? Now she's turning and becoming proactive, right? We see she said, I can't go to the king, right? And Mordechai is speaking to her, and what does she say? Lech knoset kol ha'yudim. Get everybody together who is in Shushan and fast for me and don't eat or drink for 3 days. And also, I'm going to do it with my women who are with me. V'kasher avadati avadati. I am taking responsibility for my actions. If I'm going to get killed doing this, I am willing to take that risk. Now, that is fascinating, because what does Shaul always say every time he makes a mistake and Shmuel comes and he confronts him? It's not my fault. The people really did it. They pressured me, right? It's a very difficult job to be king, right? I tried my best. You put me in a difficult situation that I have to wait so many days until you come for the korban. Here, what is she saying? I am taking full responsibility. And also, what is she saying? Get everyone together and fast. Shaul also many times doesn't use fasting and the idea of food in the proper way. And here she's saying, okay, we have to fast. We have to make sure that we're davening to Hashem. And also, lech knoset kol ha'yudim. Let's be unified. We have to be unified in our tefillah, in our tzom, in order to make sure that we can make a change in what's going on in Am Yisrael. So after that, what would you expect, right? Maybe Mordechai is going to say, don't forget, I told you to throw yourself down at Ahasuerus's feet. That's the plan, right? But what does it say? Go to page 5, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vaya'avor Mordechai, vaya'as kechol asher tzivta alav Esther. In the beginning, Mordechai is saying everything. He's telling Esther what to do. Now, Esther is giving the commands, right? And Mordechai follows everything that she's saying about Tzom, right? And that everyone should get together together. When Mordechai was in sackcloth, so everyone was feeling depressed. Everyone was feeling helpless. But what are we seeing that Esther is saying? If you organize, if you become unified, what is there going to be? There's going to be hopefulness. We're going to feel that maybe there is a chance. And what does Esther do, surprisingly? Esther decides that she's going to make parties. Why does she decide that she's going to make parties? Because Esther realizes that her first job is destroy Haman. Of course, she has to save the Jewish people, right? But her first job is to destroy Haman. Mordechai didn't say destroy Haman. He just said save the Jewish people. But what does Esther realize? As long as Haman is around, right, the Jewish people cannot be saved. And as a result, what does she do? She says, we're going to have a party. And what does she know? Oh, Haman is so arrogant. He's so full of himself. Really, he wants the crown. He wants to make sure that he's going to have the total power. And he's playing Ahasuerus for a fool. And once he gets all the money from all the Jews, he's going to have the power and he's going to be king. So Esther realizes, I have to destroy Haman. How am I going to do that? Through jealousy. Esther realizes what a powerful midah and quality jealousy is. It destroys people so quickly. And unfortunately, we saw what it did to Shaul, right? Shaul was so jealous of David that the whole second part of Shmuel Aleph is Shaul trying to run after David to make sure that he's not going to be king. So she makes all these parties. And what happens at these parties? Ahasuerus is shocked and thinking, why is she only inviting Haman? What is going on here that it's just the three of us having these parties? So she is really planting, right, all these doubts in the mind of Ahasuerus. And it's working, because when Haman wants to build a gallows to destroy Mordechai, he's so excited he runs to the palace in the middle of the night. It just so happens, right, we see amazing hashkacha pratis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, hashkacha of Am Yisrael, that what can't Ahasuerus, can't sleep that night, the night that Mordechai, right, is going to be hung on the gallows because Haman wants to make the gallows, and he's coming to Ahasuerus in order to get his approval to build such a big gallows, right, for this kind of construction project, right, in the middle of Shushan. And what happens? Oh, he can't sleep. They bring Sefer HaZichronot, and what does he hear? Mordechai really wanted to save me, right, because of the conspiracy that I would be poisoned. And they read him the story, and he wants to do a good deed for Mordechai, right? And what happens? And you have to, of course, the Megillah is filled with irony. You have to understand the irony, which means Ahasuerus signed the decree to destroy all the Jews because of Mordechai's actions. And now he wants to celebrate Mordechai, who saved his life, right? And Haman gives the idea. What is Haman's idea? Oh, give him the horse, give him the clothing, and give him the crown, because what does Haman think? It's for me. And what does Ahasuerus realize? So what is Esther doing? Look at the Gemara, number 27. Esther is planting, right, doubts in the mind of Ahasuerus. The Gemara says beautifully, Tanu Rabbanan, Marata Esther Shezimna Taman. Like, what is this party idea? Right? Just go and beg Ahasuerus to save Bnei Israel. So Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Pachim Tamnalo. She's brilliant because she is setting up, right, obstacles for Haman. And he's going to trip over himself and he's going to self-destruct. And that's exactly what happens. Because what happens at the party, right? When she says Haman HaRasha at the second party, she realized she has to build up some of the drama. At the second party, when she says Haman HaRasha, now remember, she didn't tell Ahasuerus who she is. So just to say right now who she is, that would be a shock for Ahasuerus, right? Why should he side with Esther versus Haman? But he already has a lot of doubts about Haman. So what is his response? Yeah. And when people tell him that there's a gallows ready, he says, yeah, you're going to hang Haman on it. And when he's out thinking about this crazy question that here, Haman wants to destroy his wife's nation, right? His queen's nation. When he goes out, Haman throws himself at Esther to beg, right? And again, you get the irony. Mordechai told Esther to throw herself to the feet of Ahasuerus to beg, and Mordechai's begging is totally going to destroy him. And once he sees that, right, Ahasuerus is convinced. Haman and all his sons are hung. But that's not the end, right? Look at number 29, we're on page 6, in Perek Chet, right, we're moving. From Ahasuerus' point, he's fine, because what did he only care about? He didn't care he's going to destroy a whole nation, all the Jews and her people. It was a personal petty jealousy for him. So once Haman and his sons are hung, he's okay, right? So what does Esther realize? Okay, I destroyed Beit Haman. Why is that? Because Esther realized she had to destroy Haman, not only as a precondition to save Am Yisrael, but also she had to finish up Amalek. And Haman is the only identifiable Amaleki that we have right at that moment. And after that time, we don't have any identifiable Amalekim. We have evil in this world, but the Gemara says very clearly that once Assyria came and it really combined all the nations in the way it attacked, we can't identify, right, the nation of Amalek anymore. But Haman was totally identifiable. Haman Agagi. And he deserved to be destroyed because of his actions. He wanted to destroy all the Jewish people, right? Tens of thousands, some people say hundreds of thousands of Jews at that time. So he deserves this punishment very clearly. But from her point of view, it was also a destruction because he was Haman HaAgagi, to make up as a tikkun for what Shaul didn't do, and also to save the Jewish people. But now, what is her job, right? Her job now is to make sure that Mordechai is now going to be the second in command. And what does she do? Look at number 31, right? We're in Perek Chet Pasuk Gimel, number 31, page 6, number 31. Vatosef Esther, vatedaber lifnei hamelech, vatipol lifnei raglav, vatefch, vatitchanen lo, lahavir et ra'at haman agagi, which means, number one, for her, destroy Haman. But number two, she has to do what Mordechai asked. And of course, she has to save the Jewish people. And it's not so simple because what do we know? The rule is they only find out now. It doesn't matter. You could beg as much as you want. But once I put out a decree, it can't be rescinded. So what do they have to do? They have to write another decree. But look at the decree. Number 31, we're in Perek Chet and we're in Pasuk Yud Aleph. What is the decree? Bnei Israel can lihikahel v'la'amod al nafsham. We can gather and we can defend ourselves. And how do we defend ourselves? Sometimes you have to lahashmid laharog u'la'abed et kol chel am u'medina hatzarim otam. Right? You have to be aggressive. You have to fight a war. But in this decree, it says, even the taf v'nashim u'shlalam lavoz. Here, right, when they're defending themselves, they're given the ability, if they want, to kill the women and children, right, and take all the spoils. But that's not what we see Bnei Israel do. What do Bnei Israel do? And look at Perek Tet Pasuk Tet Vav. The Jews do get together, right? Vayahargu b'shushan 300 people. Obviously, this is a defensive war. They don't go out right, to kill other people. They're defending themselves, but we all know that when you fight a war, you have to really destroy the enemy that is also having the right to kill you. So it very clearly says there are 300 men that they kill, and they also don't take from the spoils, which means the people that they're confronting now are not Amalek. So, of course, right, they're not going to focus, right? They're not going to project. They're not going to make their attack, right, on the individuals, right, who cannot defend themselves. Unfortunately, today we have a different kind, of enemy, right? They can release the hostages and they could stop the war any moment, you know, that they want. But in those days, it was very important, right, to set these clear messages. And it keeps on saying, Ubabiza lo shalchu et yadam. But a lot of people die. Look at Pasuk Tetzayin, right? Because there's 127 lands. And a lot of people, unfortunately, right, die. Chamisha v'shivim elef, 75,000 people in this massive 127 lands, because this is a real war. The non-Jews come and attack the Jews, and the Jews have to defend themselves. But they don't take from the biza. They don't take from the spoils. And what happens, right? We see that that is also done as a tikkun for Shaul and Amalek. And
75,000 Jews
die? No, non-Jews. Sonehem, their enemies. That's a lot of people. One second, I'm going to finish, and then I'll take questions. Okay? I will take questions. I just want to finish this idea because we're towards the end. And what you see in Pasuk Kaf, that Mordechai writes to all the people the story of Purim and what happened. And what we see in Pasuk Kaf Zayin, we're on the last page already, we see that what is the response of Bnei Israel? That you're going to have a celebration, you're going to give matanot la'evyonim, you're going to do mishloach manot ish l're'ehu. It was accepted, and Bnei Israel accepted it upon themselves, but also the al zar'am, on their future generations. Because what's important to remember this idea, it was such an important message, right, that Hashem saves us, even in Galut, that we can defend ourselves, that we do care about community. And that's why Pasuk Kafchet, Niskarim v'nasim b'chol dor v'dor. Every generation, every family, every nation, every city, and we never forget about Purim. Just like we have to remember about the evil, right, and our job is to destroy evil, in Purim, we were destroying evil, right? And we can't forget that Hashem saves us, right? Whether we're in Eretz Yisrael or whether we're in Galut. And that's why the idea of Venafachu is so important. And we celebrate it and we have to remember it every generation. But what's fascinating in Pasuk Kaftet, Vatichtov Esther Hamalka, Esther Hamalka Bat Avichayil Umordechai HaYehudi. Both of them together, but we are now mentioning Esther first, write the entire message of Purim, and they write Megillat Esther, and they send Sfarim, Pasuk Lamed, to all the different communities, Divrei Shalom Ve'emet, which means our goal is always Shalom Ve'emet, but we understand that sometimes we have to do war in order to get to Shalom Ve'emet. And once they send all these messages all over, Pasuk Lamed Bet, but on whose word was Purim and the Megillah really established, according to the Megillah, Lamed Bet, and according to the Medrash that we did in the beginning, Uma'amar Esther Kiyam Divrei HaPurim Ha'ele V'Nichtav Basefer. It really is the word of Esther, because she really is the heroine. And that's why it's Megillat Esther, because she is the one who really destroys Haman. She is the one who begs Achashverosh. She is the one who makes sure Mordechai is going to become second in command. She, with her tzniut, steps up and redeems the whole idea of Shaul and the idea of Malchut and the reputation of Shevet Binyamin. And we celebrate this for all the generations. And women are obligated in all the mitzvot of Purim because afhena yubo to'anes. And the debate is, oh, were they also going to be destroyed, as the Balei HaTosfot say? And that's why we're included, because we were also going to be destroyed. But the Rashbam says, no, ki hen ikar ha-nes, because we are the main individuals of the ness, of the miracle. And I think for us, it's very important, not only, right, when we celebrate Purim, that we should make sure that we have the kavanah, right, the venafachu, that we should have a great nes, right, done for us today. But we know it also takes our hishtatfut. We are junior partners with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And tomorrow, on the very special day of Tanit Esther, right, we have a lot of rabbanim who are speaking about a lot of different tachnunim and tefillot that we should say together and that we should say wherever we are, because our tefillot really have a big impact. The first thing that Esther said was, Lech knoset kol ha'yudim, get everyone together, v'tzumu alai, and that is really something that we can do in addition to the charity, in addition to, you know, sending our sons, my son is in Miluim, right, to fight for Am Yisrael, and all the tzedakah that we help in all different ways, right, our tefillah is so important. And just like, and I love ending with this, but it's so important, just like we have the idea of Bizchut Nashim Tzidkaniyot, Shebechol Do, She, the women in Mitzrayim saved Am Yisrael. The women in every generation really have the ability to save Am Yisrael. And every one of us in this room, right, is that individual. We have that koach. It doesn't matter what our personality is. Our inner strength is something that each one of us has. And our koach hatfilah can really break through and really bring the geula, and that we should really see the nisim and niflaot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'mehera b'yameinu.